The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
I am joined by Dr. Mary O'Kane, lecturer in psychology and early childhood education, and of course, author of Perfectly Imperfect Parenting, as well as a number of other books on the topic of parenting. Any questions that you have, you can fling them into us. Morning, Mary. How are you?
Good morning, Anton. I'm good, good, good.
An interesting one. I would like advice on self-esteem issues for a young dyslexic. This is how they phrase it. A young dyslexic grappling with schoolwork in school with his peers. He's very intelligent, but the dyslexia and trying to learn academics with it is extremely challenging. Because I assume what goes with that is that kids might be unwilling to ask additional questions in class because it shows up that they're not following as quickly as everybody else. There's a whole series of challenges that would go with that.
Funny, Anton, self-esteem is two things. It's feeling a combination of feeling loved and a feeling strong and capable. So this kid could absolutely know they're loved, but if they're not feeling that capability, and if you have any issue that's affecting you in school, it's going to make you feel less competent and less capable in that environment. So any supports. Now, I have to just be straight up here. I'm not an expert in dyslexia and I should just say that. But I mean, definitely there's the Dyslexia Association of Ireland, like the supports you can get. Talk to the teacher. Is there SNA? Is there other support in the school? Like, do whatever you can to support your child to be the best they can be in that school context. But this is probably potentially something that they will be dealing with for the rest of their life. I mean, people deal with dyslexia all the time and they go on to do all sorts of exciting things in the world. So I would also say try and make sure that this isn't the only reflection of how he's seeing himself. Like, could he get involved in sports? Is he into Kodu Dojo? Like, you know, all these other things. Look at his other talents, his strengths, and really reinforce them too.
Is there something as well in inculcating in children the confidence to say when they don't know or to verbalise when they need help or further explanation? Because there's awful pressure on all of us to always apparently have the right answers.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of bravery to say, either I don't know or can you explain that to me again?
So hard to do that, and so hard to do it in the school context when every other kid is sitting there listening. Funny, Anton, research on teenagers shows our teenagers see mistakes as failure. Our teenagers can be quite harsh on themselves and they don't like admitting they don't know. They don't like admitting they don't know what's going on. But particularly if he's aware I am struggling with this issue, he is much less likely to put up his hand in class because he's also thinking they're not struggling with it. This is, you know, my issue rather than it being general. But again, it's the support from the school, the support from the teacher. But I would definitely broaden it out. You want him. Dyslexia is one tiny little part of who that kid is. Every one of us, we have our strengths, we have our weaknesses. Everybody. We look at other people and we think, oh, they have everything going on. They know what they're doing. No, we all have our weaknesses. So talk to him about this, but really work on his other strengths as well. So he sees himself more rounded than just that.
Interesting one. Say, my 9-year-old daughter has become the third wheel in a friendship with two other girls. Over the school year, she has moved from a wider group to this new, quotes, pairing. The other two girls were originally friends. So my daughter is the new arrival. And over the summer, sometimes was included, but then also got left out by the other two, which was hurtful. It's as if she's a part-time member of the group, which is a hard place to be. Any advice?
That's a really hard place to be. Usually when there's three in friendships, there's sort of two options. And the first one, which is really negative one, is you have like a queen bee, can be male or female, but you have a queen bee with two people that they play off against each other. So you have a strong character who plays off. Or the other option with three is exactly what she's describing. You have a pairing who let this other person come in, but it can be really hard to be that third. And if they have known each other for so long, they're probably used to doing certain things together. And it's not that they're deliberately cutting her out, but if they're used to doing certain things, they don't even think of her. So what I would say is think about, from the parent's perspective, adding in a fourth. Or maybe talk to the child as well and let them know this isn't necessarily personal. It's just that they were friendly first. But say you're having them over. This wider group that she was friendly with, could we bring in somebody from that? So there's four. But you know, one of the most important things in friendship, Santon, is it doesn't matter their age, 9, whatever it is not to put all their eggs in one basket. And so many kids do. So they have my one or two or three friends. I have my group and maybe from school and that's it. What about friends on the road? What about your cousins? What about your local tennis club? Or do you go to GAA? Do you have friends in that? So for parents, I always say cultivate different groups because they might not need them too much at 9. this kid does, by the time they're a teenager, it's really important. They have friendships in different camps because they're going to be let down. It's just life. No kid is going to get through to adulthood unscathed by friendships. So the best support you can have if a friendship group lets you down, obviously a caring adult, but there's actually a different group to go to. So think about that as well.
Another one, the same sort of age group. I have a 7-year-old who's a happy child, but an only child. For various reasons, we have made the decision to try for another baby, and we have never regretted that decision. But some comments from a family friend about what only children miss out on by not having siblings have been playing on my mind. I'm now doubting myself and worried that our decision, which obviously she had no say in, might impact on her socially.
Isn't it funny how you can go through life happy with your parenting and happy with your family? Happy child, and somebody comes along and they say something, and you have sleep. You're waking at 4 a.m. and you think, oh my God, what have I done? And you doubt yourself. We all do it so much. So the first thing I would say is try, I know it's hard, but try not to let somebody else look at your family. And are you happy with your little triangular family? And if you are happy, Anton, there was this psychologist years ago, back in the 1900s. His name was G. Stanley Hall. And this man, only children, well, they can't share and they're selfish and they can't socialise and blah, blah. He hated teenagers too. He hated a lot of people under 18. He was quite influential. So he would make these declarations and people, oh, yeah, oh, isn't G. Stanley Hall right? So now we know he wasn't, okay? He got away with it for a while. But no, the research says now a lot of what he said was untrue. But he kind of created a lot of myths about different groups of children. And we now know that that's not the case. Children nowadays socialise in so many different ways. And it's not the quantity in a family. It's the quality of the relationships. Your daughter, I'd say to this parent, your daughter could be one of 7 and could have 4 siblings who she really doesn't get on with, who make her life very difficult. So it's really not the quantity. It is the quality. Just make sure she's socialising.
Well, a very interesting one arrived as you're talking. Says, do you have any advice for sibling rivalry? I have twin boys aged 11. They are very different characters with very different sets of friends.
Oh, now, sibling rivalry. We always say, I treat my children equally. I treat them absolutely equally. We don't. We actually don't. That's not true. We might try to.
You're saying you've got a favourite, Mary, aren't you?
Oh, get me in big trouble here, Anton. I do not. But we don't treat them equally. And if they are completely different characters, sure, how could you treat them equally? You're automatically treating them in completely different ways. Very often, do you know what's at the heart of rivalry? It's one feeling that the other is getting more time, more attention, more love, more consideration. And so say if one is really outgoing and really whatever, and the other you're maybe concerned about, maybe you're pouring all your attention into one you're a little bit more worried about. Don't have to be twins. We do this with, you know, any sibling. It doesn't matter what it is, but very often if they see, hold on, he or she is dedicating more time to one, that can cause it. So think about how you treat them. The other thing is, it's not always right to treat them equally. It's about treating them fairly. Do you know what I mean? So this sounds really contradictory to what I've just said, but that's life. There are times when one child, for whatever reason it might be, like that first little 9-year-old who, you know, is a third wheel. If she's one of 3, that the parents are probably focusing on her at the moment.
Now, I have a sense before I ask this question, the answer is going to be no, but I'll try it anyway. Is there any value in some degree of sibling rivalry? Because if you have created ambitious, competitive, eager children, surely they look at their twin, who is the nearest match for them on the planet, and say, I'm going to outstrip you.
Hunger Games here, you know. Well, you know something? Look at the previous person who was talking about the only child. Sometimes the hustle and bustle of being with a sibling is good for you. Like, it makes you more resilient if you're having that bit of competition. Also, there's something about, and I know this parent is probably thinking, no, Mary, this is not what I need to hear. I want them to be good and kind and whatever to each other. And yes, talk to them about that. But there is something about, who do we take things out on? We take it out on the person nearest to us. So you kind of know you can give your sibling a dig and get away with it. You probably wouldn't do it to your best friend. But that doesn't mean it's not a caring relationship either. Does that help
tricky.
At all?
There's layers it, like an onion.
You know, it's really tricky.
Quick one before we wrap up. My 3-year-old is potty trained after her second birthday. However, she still can't get trained at night. She's now started to wet herself during the day as well. 3 times yesterday, once today. Very frustrating. What can we do to stop this?
Most kids are trained in the day before they're ever trained in the night. So that's actually quite normal. You know, when they suddenly regress, no matter what it is, when they regress in anything, we think, what's going on? It's like the tip of the iceberg. The regression is that little tip. You see that, but actually it's what's going on underneath is what's really important. And has something changed? Usually transitions. Now, it could be anything. Did she start play school in September? You know, there could be something going on. So look at that first. Has there any transition that's knocked her? If there has been no transition, could it possibly be that we're getting a little touchy about not, you know, keep wetting the bed at night? I mean, I've been there. It's not funny. You're washing the sheets and you're whatever. So could she sense that her parents are now stressed about this and that's impacting her? I know people who do toilet training say, never go backwards. I would say go backwards. If you think it's no transition, if you think it's stress, put the pull-ups on her and just take all the stress away and start to get afresh in time.
Mary, as ever, thank you very much. That is Mary O'Kane, lecturer in psychology and early childhood education and author of Perfectly Imperfect Parenting.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.